on like 75 on 80 meters. What I'm going to tell you is something very, very unusual, because I did get a printout from a Japanese amateur radio magazine called 5-9. And they have a number of Japanese stations that have documented under very good conditions. They have, really scientifically documented that on, for instance, they have heard their signal like on 3.5 megahertz, CW, the 80 meter CW portion of the band, and heard the transmissions coming back, the transmissions coming back 5, 10, and 15 minutes later, delay times of anywhere from 15 seconds and upwards of 50 minutes. Now, do you believe this, Dick? Over.
Now, if you said 5, 10, or 15 seconds, you're saying one thing. You did say 5, 10, or 15 minutes. A minute of delay is now at the speed of light, representing a distance that's way beyond the moon. I mean, to the moon and back is a 2.5 second delay, and that's a little more than a quarter of a million miles one way. More than half a million miles round trip, 2.5 seconds of delay. So for there to be a reflecting layer out there, which is big enough to give you a big echo, and the further away it is, it's got to be a lot bigger to give you enough echo because of free space laws, to get many minutes of delay without somebody creating a hoax, does represent a problem if it was delay at the speed of light. Now, there's some other mechanism that the ionosphere or a plasma cloud in space can do, where the wave travels through it very slowly, it becomes more explainable. But if we're talking about speed of light phenomena, at 186,000 miles per second, and then 60 seconds per minute, we're talking about lots of millions of miles here to the reflector and back. And to get that much echo power, that reflector would have to be a number of miles in diameter. So I'm not saying I don't believe. I'm just telling you what some of the degrees of difficulty are for it to be as advertised. K2KEY, K2RIW.
KC2QIQ.
Go ahead, Glenn.
It sounds crazy, but it sounds like sundown to me. 8 minutes up, 8 minutes back. I know it's like it sounds pretty far back. So 15 minutes, that's a long time for a signal on 80 meters, right? So to come back would be so, I mean, so dispersed and whatever was left of the signal, I'd be really, really impressed with the receiver that could actually measure such a thing. And I think you'd feel like this.
By the way, sundown has been done intentionally. You take a great big phased array of 30 megacycle antennas, Yagis, a whole couple of acres of them, put a megawatt of power into it, you will get a recognizable echo back from the sun. That's been done. But boy, that's a lot of hardware to do it. Over to you, Mel.
You can too, QIQ, with one more comment.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Amateur power and CW as a mode and single reception receiver, that is far-fetched.
I won't say it's impossible. I am saying what I think are some of the degrees of difficulty. You got to worry a little bit about somebody creating a hoax, making a tape recording and playing it back, so to speak. Minutes of delay with a tape recorder are awfully easy to do. Back to you, Mel.
Hey, this is K2KEY. I got the call letters from all of the Japanese amateurs that participated in this experiment at one time, and they actually, I mean, this flipped me out, but one of them said that they made a measurement that the echo came back 24 hours and 10 minutes later. The calculation was 86 AU. 86, I guess that's astronomical units. and they said the course this actually was coming back, they calculated that the sun is 87 AU in this time period, that this approached somewhere on the outer band of the sun, and oh, here's a whole bunch of things here, mathematics. I mean, this was a serious study and how they authenticated that that was the correct signal. And this is what was done on 3.5 megahertz. I just said, you know, this sounds like a tall tale, but from all this massive stuff that they submitted, I'm wondering, could there be more to this than meets the eye? That's why I said, are we dealing with amateur radio science fiction here, Dick, over?
By the way, the sun has a distance from us of exactly one astronomical unit. That's the definition of the astronomical unit. It's the average mean distance between us and the sun. Radio-wise, at the speed of light, the sun is 8 minutes away. So, if the sun suddenly makes a blast of solar noise of some kind, and you've got a satellite nearby that sees it, that radio blast, 8 minutes, is going to be at the Earth. Radio-wise, sun is 8 minutes away. One astronomical unit. The furthest thing we know about and easily talk about in this universe is Pluto, which used to be a planet. Now it's a planetesimal. But Pluto is 39 astronomical units away from the sun. 39 times 8 minutes is nowhere near 24 hours. So, to Pluto and back, an awful big distance, wouldn't explain it. So, I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just telling you it's difficult to explain. And if somebody was making a tape recording and playing it back as a hoax, unfortunately it's too easy to explain. Yes, the possibility exists, it's real, and people are thinking it's a hoax. So I guess we got to keep an open mind, but we've also got to keep your feet on the ground of what little you know of physics, of what's possible. At the speed of light, those kind of big delays, kind of hard to explain. Back to you, Mel.
This is K2KY. Well, the way one of them, the Japanese scientists, actually, a number of these are all very well-known amateur radio scientists and engineers and professors there in the credentials are really enormous and happen to be involved with an experiment where it came up and they said the long-delayed echoes do not occur any time. When they do occur, they have a certain pattern or concentrated specified time period. The key to generating LDE possibly is linked to CME and solar flares. And they go on to tell you that it has to do, they deal with something to the effect of whatever this means. Where the heck did I just see it? Something about this, oh my God, I read it somewhere here, about where the heck is this? I'm going to find my spot here. Something about, certain about a, something to do with the this Cooper asteroid belt or something. I saw that here someplace. Did you ever hear of this, Dick? Over.
Okay, I'm going to go one at a time. CME stands for coronal mass ejection. The sun does send out tons and tons of stuff per second. High velocity ionized particles. A lot of them hit the magnetic fields of the Earth, eventually end up creating the aurora borealis and the aurora australis as those particles get focused by the Earth's magnetic field and hit the top of our atmosphere and create this glow that we call the aurora. So this plasma-like material, tremendous amounts of it, in great big bursts, great big clouds of it, are emitted by the sun from time to time. So, could a great big blast of coronal mass ejection material go out there in space and focus itself as a great big parabolic dish and act as a very favorable reflector with the Earth at the focal point. Yes, it's possible. But at 3.5 megs, you have to have... you're not going to do it at high noon where your D layer absorption is huge. Let me drop. You got to get through the D layer. You got to get through the ionospheric layer. You got to get out into space. I mean, you're only going to get a small fraction of a delay if the whole signal goes long path around the Earth. To get many seconds in minutes, we're talking about a signal wrapping itself around the Earth 100 times, 1,000 times. Not impossible, but fine, is that unlikely. So it's got to leave the Earth to get these really long delayed echoes. Could it be hitting a plasma cloud that was issued by a coronal mass ejection of the Sun? Unlikely, but possible. You have the Oort cloud out there, and the, I can't think of the name of this other belt. Beyond Pluto, you have two other great big things that look a little bit like an asteroid belt. You got a bunch of junk out there that periodically comes in as a comet or an asteroid. Oort cloud, and I can't think of the name of the other one. It'll eventually come to me. So you got two great big clouds beyond our solar system of stuff that is in orbit around this sun. And could that stuff, that far away, give you a big enough reflecting surface to give you a good enough focused echo that when it comes back, it's that far above threshold? Every radar engineer knows there's something called the inverse force law. Double the distance between you and the aircraft, and the amount of echo you get on your radar goes down by 2 to the 4th power, which is 16. You get 1/16th the amount of power in the echo from an airplane when you have doubled the distance of that airplane to your radar. So double the distance, 16 dB down. When you talk about the kind of distance out to Pluto and beyond, and you plug that into the radar equation, you immediately see how difficult it is to get a big enough echo area at that range that when the signal comes back, it's still above threshold. Again, I'm not saying impossible. I'm telling you why it's so difficult to explain in my mind. K2KE1, K2RIW.
Roger, this is K2KE1. I see shows here, there's Cooper belts and a whole business, so many diagrams and so much math. Dick, the math is mind-boggling. There's page and page of math here. There's this gentleman who is the, did the work there and all, and it gives his credentials here. It's chief of physics of one of the Tokyo University, poet laureate, this or that, and then it's, his name is Y. Nakashishi, J-A-3-O-M-B. And he explains, he says that he received it, the Doppler shift he measured was +300 to -200 hertz. And at 3.5 megacycles, and the rate of flutter with the apparent speed of the Earth of +25 to -17 kilometers per second. Something that can only occur only in space. That's what he says here. He goes through a whole business here, Dick, and I'm just saying that it sounds so impossible that he says the maximum echo that was measured on 1.8 megahertz BW by JA3ONB, his starting transmission time was 19 hours and 54 minutes. It was received back at a 0625, 80, that is, wound up with 82 hours and 32 minutes. Then he says distance and AU here, 298. And he goes on to say that it's almost unexplained because he goes through a lot of math and he shows that what the signal would be like, where it travels. I don't know what to make of it, Dick, but it sounds like really science fiction, amateur radio science fiction over.
go.
Yeah, we can't completely discount it because LDE, long delayed echoes, have been talked about for 70 years, some great big period of time. Go ahead, Rich. N2EO, K2LIW.
Yeah, this is very prevalent in the 60s and early 70s. Probably amateur radio science fiction, or how would you put it? What do you call? You know, they wanted to believe this stuff. There were even articles in QST saying these were transponders from an alien craft. And there was all kinds of stuff around. But you know, this is the days of, you remember when there was a book published, and now you probably remember, Vic, you probably remember, by Betty and Barney Hill. And I'm not going to get into that, but if you remember Betty and Barney Hill, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, Vic.
I sure do, and I've forgotten the name of their book. Incident at Exeter is the name of the book. They were in Exeter, New Hampshire, very close to Franconia Notch, and had a close encounter of the third kind. And the evidence that they presented is difficult to discount. The story certainly has a tremendous amount of strangeness to it, but the sincerity of the people, and I've seen them, I've seen Betty interviewed, Barney didn't live very long after it. It was a black-white couple, a black man married to a Caucasian lady, and they appear to have had an extremely serious encounter, which, as I said, is hard to explain. I don't thoroughly discount it. I've got a lot of skepticism about it, but I don't discount it. My gut feel when I saw Betty being interviewed on television is she struck me as a very simple, sincere person. She didn't look like a person who wanted to create a hoax. There was very little benefit for her doing it. There are people who can say she wrote a book and made a lot of money. I don't think she made a lot of money. I don't think that was her motivation. So I don't discount it. Maybe you're somewhat familiar with the situation. Now, K2KEY, K2LIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, it was one of the unexplained. She submitted even at one point to a lie detection truth serum. There was a number of people that, of course, discounted. But a couple of people that really said that for her to be able to fabricate that story to that extent and pass so many different psychological and different tests, and yet to never be caught on a lie, was really unexplained. Now, as far as this professor here, JA3OND, he says here his calculations showed that distance was 297 AU, which means it was exactly took me to the reflected signal had actually traveled to the Cooper Belt and back. And he has so much measurements, astronomical measurements and technical material here. He made a scientific study of this, Dick, and I just can't. Well, it's mind-boggling just to think that he did one of these experiments on 1.8 megahertz. Over.
Now, if I understand you correctly, he decided that the time was right, that if he transmits right now, at his aiming of the antenna and his orientation of the Earth and the location in space where they saw an LDE before. I think you're telling me he predicted he was going to get an LDE. He predicted the timing of it, went and made the measurement, and it confirmed. Is that sort of what you're saying, Mel? Go ahead.
Roger, in fact, he did something special. A certain way the code was sent even, so that he could authenticate that it wasn't a hoax. And I mean, this is really mind-boggling. And he I mean, this is, you know, the calculations and all. This is not, you know, some kind of a harebrained thing. I mean, he went through a heck of a lot of highly technical materials here and worked with, they have a whole list of astronomers here that were also some way involved. I don't know how he even understood how to come up with this, what time and when. But how even pick 1.8 megahertz, 160 meters, and this is experiment, I don't know what to say, Dick. It just fascinated me so much when I heard the discussion on 75 meters that I questioned it. And one of the guys was kind enough to send me a transcript of the Japanese papers that were published in their 5-9 magazine, translated into English, Dick, over.
I am curious, Mel. He claimed that he was going to experience a long delay echo. He knew when, what frequency, whatever, what direction. Is there anything that stated how many times he repeated the experiment? Did he get the experiment to work once? On prediction, very significant. Get it to work two or three times on prediction? Wow. So how many times do you think he was able to repeat the experiment, Mel? Go ahead.
Not only did he repeat the experiment a number of times, he had one time an echo come back, delayed echo, 34 hours, 19 minutes, and another one at 82 hours on another test, done another time at 82 hours and 32 minutes. He then got involved with a number of other Japanese stations, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other Japanese stations that were able to duplicate the same results, which was all done in between the years of 98. And the last one was accomplished in 2004. They were able at times also to duplicate this feat. However, none of them said that they could get an echo back that long. Most JA-8-DNV was able to receive an echo back the most before, after that, at 26 hours and 10 minutes. The other echoes varied anywhere down to as low as 15 seconds. So, there it is. I could say a number of stations in Japan seem to have been able to duplicate. The only American station that was able to come somewhere, he says, near his same experiment was W6WYW, who did it on November 11th, 2001, and was able to receive an echo back in 30 minutes, Dick, on 3.5 megahertz, over.
When you get an echo 80 hours later from a transmission you made, does that mean he sat in front of the rig, scanning up and down, looking for the Doppler shift, looking for his signal coming back as an echo, and he's in front of the rig for a good portion of 86 hours, or he's got a staff of people that take over while he sleeps? You can see the degree of difficulty here. Again, I'm not saying impossible, but wow, a heroic effort to confirm a concept. And I guess what you're saying is he is predicting the concept is repeatable, on demand. Can he do it a certain number of days of the year when the Earth is in a certain orientation? Can he do it year after year? Tell me anything more about long repetition of the long delayed echo. Back to you, Mel.
KC2QAQ with a comment?
Go ahead, Glenn.
I mean, maybe I'm just thinking this too simply, but let's say, what kind of antenna would do this? Let's say he had a horn cut 80 meters at amateur power levels, because these are amateur bands, and you could point it at an angle at which you could somewhat predict the trajectory of the signal and when it was going to come back. And then you have the receiver issue, what kind of receiver he was going to be using. And then let's say he had a data logger listening down. That's wide band. Wide band doesn't need narrow, small signals. Or he had number of receivers set up in a row with each one with data loggers sitting there for 80 hours. And how could you even decipher the difference between reading the data logger of which was his signal and RM and QRN coming back in that period of time? And it just in itself is baffling. KC2QIQ.
With modern-day PSK31 technique, this would be doable in a fairly automatic manner, although you'd have a big frequency offset you'd have to work on. So, how many times over how many years do you believe this professor duplicated it? Give us any words along those lines, Mel. Go ahead.
According to the article I'm reading here, he duplicated it a number of times. Methods, but this was under very scientific control. It was being done at a university, Tokyo University, in the physics department. It was something that he had more or less studied and knew exactly how he determined it. I could say he's got a page of mathematics here that was boggling the mind. That so much mathematics that he used to do this research. And then he had other stations took over some more of the experiments and also duplicated to some extent his experiments. He explains here that the certain links to it with the LVLs and CMEs had to be the right season, the right time, the right window, and how he determined that it's quite something about the sunspot peak and how the cycle works. And I don't know. I tell you, I could say very difficult to follow what's going on here because maybe in the translation some of it was possibly lost. But the scientists, some of the scientists here tell you that what the signal, if it could travel, and echo back from this time at this wavelength and all, they give the specifications what the signal would be like. And I don't know how possibly you could even detect a signal that, I don't know, like -247 dBs or something like that. Oh, the condition for the path on 160 meters, if correct, would have be -268 dBs on receive, over.
Q2QIQ, with one more common question.
Yeah, -268 dB is 60 decibels below one photon per second. One photon per second is -205 dBm, rough number. Powerful weak signal. When it comes back to you, Mel, I'm going to be asking you, at 160 meters, I don't think you used anything but a dipole antenna. There are very few antennas you can use on 160. How much power did he use? And you can't overcome those kind of dBs with just raw power. Go ahead, Glenn.
The question I have, Mel, is did he describe the equipment that was being used, what kind of measurements were being taken, what type of receiver, what type of transmitter, what type of antenna? Usually in most really good scientific papers, it's back to units and standards, the types of equipment that were being used, how the measurements were made. The mathematics are great, but the setup that's being used, because it's always the setup that has to be tested, the scientific process to prove that something really happened. Did you give enough detail with the equipment and what was actually being used? Let me throw it back over to Mel.
Project, standard amateur radio equipment. Nothing out of the ordinary here. Running a kilowatt, nothing specialized in the way of amateur radio equipment here, Glenn, over.
Okay, so just there again, it sounds highly unusual again. Sorry about that. Casey, QIQ.
Casey, QIQ,
okay, in fact, he says here calculations show that signal in one study had traveled exactly 45 billion kilometers. says, which would translate to 300 AU, and have a propagation advantage compared with EME signals at a distance of 380,000 kilometers. In spite of this remarkable differences in the distances. So, this wasn't a haphazard thing that they did. This seems to be a very scientific study. That's what really is hard. And, it's the diagrams and everything like this, it shows that there was some loss in it, whether or not he pulled off a great hoax and the others went along with him. That's another story. Back to you, Dick.
When you get a large number of people involved, and they're connected with a respected university, and they really are professors at that university, to get them all to hang together with a hoax like this is very difficult. Did they tell you anything about what was the reception? In other words, ordinary ham receiver scanning across the ham band says, hey, that's an interesting signal. Oh, by the way, it happens to be my signal that I transmitted 80 days ago, or 80 hours ago. So was it just an ordinary earphone or loudspeaker reception of a signal on a ham band? And the only unique about the signal is that, hey, that's my signal. I recognize my fist. I recognize my chirp. I recognize the message that I sent. Yeah, that's the message that I sent 8 hours ago. Do you think there was that kind of reception at multiple people at multiple locations getting it at the same time? K2KEY,
K2LAW. According to this, it was witnessed by these four or five other professors and amateur radio operators that were at university. Some of them were students, and others were the professorship. And signal was received by a Doppler shift. The Doppler shift measured between plus 300 to minus 200 hertz, plus 300 to minus 200 hertz at 1.8. The rate of flutter was the apparent speed of the Earth, plus 25 to minus 17 kilometers per second, something that only can occur in space. And that was one of their measurements. And he predicted almost exactly at times by certain boy about going through a whole rigmarole here. We talk about intricate mathematics of logarithms combined with symbols and things that I guess Einstein maybe would understand the math here, because it's even a little bit beyond me. And predicted almost approximately what time to look for the signal to come back. And the methods they used to make sure that there was, besides the Doppler shift and all this stuff, that it was nothing, that possibly somebody, pulling their leg on this over.
Yep, I hear you. I'm now trying to double check what velocity at 1.8 meg gives you 300 hertz of Doppler shift. And we are talking about Earth velocities around the solar system. The velocity of Earth in its orbit around the Sun type numbers, I think. Wild. So, you were tuning across 80 meters one night, you heard this discussion, and you asked these guys to send you more information, and I think that's how you got what you've got. Is that true, Mel?
Hey, let me tell you what the story is. This is K2KEY. There's a group of, 75 meters, got a lot of these nets. And there's one group on, and they go in for some very, borderline things like discussion of interplanetary communications and how you would, what would be like, can we make HF contacts on Mars, and there's some people on there that have some very great smarts. I mean, they have like a TechNet type of situation, but they get into really some real wild things about what's possible can be done, and we joke about it sometimes here. There's something about Star Trek and plasma and anti-plasma engines and beaming up and beaming down, and these people take some of these things very serious, and they seem to find places and all where things are being done that I would say are somewhat off the curve, Dick. and they talk about it at times, and there was one gentleman, some people know about him, named by Art Bell, that he was involved with it, and a couple of others that are, you know, they're scientists, and yet they're fiction writers and all, and, you know, you don't know where it ends, where one is letting off, the other one is beginning sometimes, Dick. Like I say, they walk a very fine line between what is possible and what may be impossible, over.
Yeah, I've heard about this guy, Art Bell, out in the Arizona area, I think. He's got this radio program that's on every night, and he does have some pretty wild stuff on there. Some of it's reasonable, and some of it's pretty wild. I'm still calculating the velocities here. They're biggie. Lots of kilometers per second. But the radar range equation would lead you to believe it's going to take a zillion mile diameter echoing device at that range to give you enough signal to this reception. The fact that a whole lot of people were in the laboratory listening to this one receiver and hearing the echo, that's okay. I'd much rather have multiple hams in multiple locations in Japan hearing the echo at the same time. Back to you, Mel.
There's a whole bunch of things in there I don't quite understand when he says how he did this calculation. C is the speed of light. 300,000 kilometers. Then he says, AU divided by speed for approximately 500 minutes, one way for AU 499.0. And then he took 500 divided by 60 here, it says that equals 8.33 hours, one way to this end. This LDE equals 82 hours, 32 minutes. Two round trip equals 297.1 AU. I mean, this is some of the results of all this math and Dick, over.
By the way, one-way Doppler of 300 hertz at 1.8 megacycles, 160 meter band, is 31 miles per second, one way. Or 15.5 miles per second, which is probably going to come out to be something like, let me multiply it up by 1.6, 24 kilometers per second round trip. I thought the Earth moves 19 miles per second. This is coming out 15 miles per second round trip Doppler. In the right ballpark, and maybe more than 300 hertz. So it is looking like the velocity of the Earth in its orbit around the Sun. And if the LDE was coming from an echo in the direction that the Earth is moving, the tangent of the circle of the orbit of the Earth around the Sun, you would get echoes like this, that amount of Doppler shift. At that lower frequency, that's a lot of Doppler. I mean, the guys doing moon bounce get Dopplers like that at frequencies like 432. That's a lot more megahertz than 1.8, 160 meters. Back to you, Mel.
And reading on here, he says that J0J3ONC, Professor Nakanashi here, says my calculation shows that
take a quick look. Is your transmitter putting out normal power? Your carrier has started getting very noisy into the machine. Yeah, mine is getting noisy too. The machine is noisy tonight. Is there a way you can boost your power? You got so noisy on that last transmission, the audio became difficult to copy. Back to you, Mel.
I don't see how power is noisy. Your noisy is going to pass off. Can you copy it all now? Take over.
Yeah, I am copying, but it's a very noisy signal. If it can
just say it in closing, he says that he thinks that possibility that we're looking for interplanetary communication on the wrong frequency where we're looking. And I'm just saying, maybe somewhere out there, they're using spark oil. Maybe they're back in Marconi stage with spark oils, and that's why we don't hear them, over.
I don't quite understand that. But we're getting late enough. This is going to be our last one. You're listening to TechNet number 1209, if I didn't miss the number here. I thought we were up to 1,300. Maybe it's 1,209. I got to look back one page here to be sure I didn't skip the numbers. Nope. 1,209, TechNet. And we're getting near the end, though. They're almost going to turn down the machine on us. And we've covered quite a bit of distance tonight, Mel. K2KUI, K2LAW.
Dick, Roger, this is K2KUI. The funny thing is, we may wind up some ham on 80 meters CW, wind up making an interplanetary contact. Ha! That would be something. Everybody's looking up there at the watering hole for interplanetary communication. And then we find out maybe it'll come on 3.5 megahertz CW. That would be the last of all times if it were ever confirmed that we make contact on 80 meters. But you know something? Anything is possible. So I'm just going to say goodnight to all. A lot of fun. Enjoy it every week, and we'll try to keep it going. Thank you very much, everybody, for the compliments, especially what we're doing. 73s, have a great week. K2RIW in the group, this is K2KEY. Good night.
73, you all. Be kind to each other.